The Capital Confidential podcast is brought to you by the Times Union, the leading newspaper in New York's Capital Region. Subscribe today or visit online at timesunion.com.
You want to deport an undocumented person? Start with me, because I'm an undocumented person.
How do we beat him in an election?
We will. I'm going to run against him.
I wish you would. I wish you would, Dad. I would.
There are things in here that are unobjectionable because they're not that effective. So, yeah, sure, I'll vote for a distinctive license plate. Sure, why not?
Jim, you had your press conference at 4 o'clock.
You're having a press conference now?
That's right. I'm having a press conference.
Well, is this your space here or is it public?
No, it's my space.
Oh, this is your
space.
Don't interrupt.
Okay.
I'm David Lombardo, and this is the Capital Confidential podcast. This episode features Assemblywoman Amy Paulin, a Westchester County Democrat who is one of the busiest lawmakers in Albany. She is a policy wonk with a habit of shepherding a lot of bills through the legislature every year. She joined the podcast to explain her legislative process and how it's evolved since joining the Assembly nearly 20 years ago. The conversation explores her partnerships with Senate Republicans, her eclectic batch of issues, and the struggle to legalize paid surrogacy. Enjoy the show. For starters, you've been in the legislature since nearly 20 years now. Has your approach to legislating always been the same, or has it gradually evolved?
It's always evolving.
Okay.
I learn new things all the time, and every year, as similar as it is, there's also differences. So you constantly have to adjust. For example, the change from a Republican majority in the Senate to a Democratic majority made me rethink and redo and prioritize different bills and obviously work with people I've never worked with before. A lot of the senators were new, brand new. There's always differences. Every year there's differences. I've had four governors. That's been different. And it's, I'm always looking at improving and changing so that I could be more effective.
So under the Senate Republican majority, were there certain members that you worked with more than others back in that time period?
Yes. You form relationships and you get to know what issues of various people, they're all individuals, might be interested in. So I had a few senators that I gravitated to, and and that's still evolving for the new Democratic Senate, I had a lot of different bills, a lot of different people this time, and sometimes the chemistry worked between the staffs or between us, and other times it didn't. So that's all, that is a constant changing.
Yeah. How did you go about feeling out the new Democratic majority this year?
That comes back to, things that I learned over time. So, for example, if I know a bill is going to be in a certain committee, transportation or health, my usual approach is to go to the chair of that committee first. All those different chairs, even though they were new, they had oversight over certain things. Like James Scoofus had oversight over GovOps. I had bills in GovOps. I went to him. I knew from the Assembly. So where a chair didn't necessarily either respond to me in a timely way or they were not that comfortable, I would go to someone like him or him, who I had a prior relationship with. Many of the members served in the Assembly, so I know them.
Okay.
So they were people who, I know, Brian Kavanaugh likes bills related to gun control or getting to know people, you get to know what their interests are. So those are how I made a lot of decisions. But if I had a brand new, I'm eclectic in my bills. So I have a great variety of different bills. It's not that they're limited to the committee I'm chair of or even committees that I have been chair of, which have been many. So I would go to, again, first the chair of the respective committee. And then if that didn't work out, then, I'd try to find someone who I knew personally, try to convince them so that, I have credibility with people who know me. So I would try to go to them and say, this is a really good bill. This is what it does. I think one of my strengths is that I know what my bills do.
You're a policy wonk.
Yeah, well, I that's what I like. You know, everybody likes different things. There's a lot of different things you can do in this job. And, you know, legislation is one of them, you know, constituent service. You'd be great at holding hearings. You could be, there's a lot of different elements. What I like best is the puzzle of the bill. You know, making sure that I have, you know, people on board, you know, that I'm working with the respective interest groups, you know, and then that I understand what the bill does, and then I can therefore be a much better advocate for the bill, whether it be in the assembly, among my colleagues and among the staff, or the Senate or the governor's office.
And I've definitely found that to be the case, you know, when talking to you, especially about some of the gun control bills, as you've held my hand as I write some of these stories and put up with multiple phone calls from me as I call back and back trying to make sure I know what's actually in the bill. So I appreciate that. And I'm just curious, you know, with the way Albany works and, you know, majority politics driving things, were you ever concerned about having to partner with, you know, Senate Republicans, that there would be a backlash, you know, in the sense that, oh, she's not teaming up with Democrats? I mean, it seems like you have to get things done by partnering with Republicans under that old dynamic.
You know, what I do often is either when I don't have a Senate sponsor or at the end of session when I'm trying to make my bills a priority for a certain senator, I'm often in their chamber. And, you know, because I sometimes have tunnel vision, you know, I was a little concerned that the impression that I might have given might have been, oh, I'm approaching a certain senator because, you know, whatever reason, mm-hmm. and avoiding others when it really was all about my bills. But that seemed to have been, you know, so I didn't know, you know, whether or not that would be viewed as a personal a problem. You know, I just didn't know. But it wasn't. You know, my colleagues in the assembly, you know, former colleagues in the assembly knew me, mm-hmm. and, you know, that I think helped, you know, among the new people, and the new people didn't know what I did last year, you know, right. The year before, right? So, you know, one of the things that I've learned in these 20 years, or 19 years, you know, is, you know, it's about the issue. It's not about the person. It's about the issue. We have to get you know, I believe in the things that I'm working on. It's about getting those done. And I think if you stay focused on that, then, you know, then the partisan stuff slips away, you know, because most of the bills are not partisan. You know, most of them are practical. You mm-hmm. know, they help people. So, no, it didn't have a negative impact, you know, that I worked well with Republicans. And, you know, I've worked equally well. In fact, I've gotten more bills done this year than I ever did before. I passed 33 two House bills, which is my record, and I believe it was number one in the Assembly as well.
And like you said before, you have an eclectic mix of bills. And is that just because you've got a, you know, diverse set of interests, or are people coming to you saying, because they know you can get things done? And it seems like domestic violence, gun control, government reform, education, healthcare, you touch on a lot of that stuff. So how does that end up all coming under your bailiwick?
Every issue came to me differently. You know, I can't, you know, when I arrived in the assembly, you arrive as the new person on the block where, you know, I like to, you know, I think it's most easily understood if you think about it, you know, you're coming into an elementary school at fourth grade. And when you come in at fourth grade, you know, anyone who started from kindergarten on, they already have their friends. They already know who the smart kid is, who the wise guy is, you know, who's the person who, you know, can run the fastest and this and that. And you don't come in with an automatic acceptance on any issue. So when I first got there, I relied on my past experience, and that helped me. And there I did have some credibility. Like, I ran an agency that served battered women, so that's where domestic violence came out of, and I felt strong there, and I was respected because I knew stuff. And gun control, I was an advocate at the county level in Westchester on gun control issues, and I helped write bills both on safe storage, which passed this year. I introduced that bill in the assembly in 2001, so persistence is another virtue. You know, so I had already written and knew and worked with New Yorkers Against Gun Violence prior to being in the assembly. So those are two issues that I came with immediately, and then others evolved. Like I was on the health committee. I developed a strong friendship with Dick Gottfried. I was interested in health care, and so some of the health bills came out a result of that interest and that friendship and the awareness that I've learned, you know, by having both the friendship and the and being on the committee, and you know, and other bills differently. Like I do a lot of animal rights bills. So that came out of Marty Rosenbaum saying you would like this woman, Stacy. She works for the ASPCA. Stacy and I automatically liked each other, and the next thing I knew, I was doing a lot of animal bills, and I have ever since. Stacy, long gone. So you know, and I also have I have a lot of very highly educated constituents who are never shy about bringing me issues, and many, many of them turn into bills, and they are all over the map. So you know, and sometimes then I develop an interest in that area, and I could do multiple bills in that area. So it really varies.
Does your staff have a tough time keeping up with you, or are they game for all this?
No, we are very organized. In fact, just yesterday, we went through every single bill that we didn't pass or make law, or you know, or two House bills, every single one in our repertoire. And we made decisions about what we could do to advance them from now until January. So we're just very organized. We have a system, and we never really stop working on bills the whole year.
Is there anything that you think people would find particularly surprising about the legislative process that they might not know already?
Not surprising. In fact, you know, what I'm going to say is going to be common sense. But has helped me more than anything. And that is to remember that you know, we're working with people. Everybody deserves respect. And if you remember to be inclusive all the time, then you're going to continue to do well. At least what I try not to do is to, you know, to go over someone's head or, you know, or do something behind someone's back. Like, it's so much easier to just bring everybody in and just do the best you can. I mean, it doesn't work all the time, but, you know, I try to do it as best I can.
What was the process like of trying to get the surrogacy bill through the assembly?
Oh, you mean not through the assembly.
Well, I guess trying to, though.
Yes, trying, of course. So, for me, I started working in that bill, I think in 2007 or 8, somewhere in that range. I met two women who lived in my district who were adoption lawyers, and they were telling me about this problem of New York being one of the only states where surrogacy is a crime, you know, right? So I had been, in trying to have my kids, my second daughter, I had a lot of infertility issues. Mm-hmm. So I had an immediate empathy toward anybody who was in the predicament of needing a surrogate in order to have a child. So I started working with them. I don't believe that, you know, we worked with, they introduced me to an organization called Resolve. We worked actively to try to get a bill. And I don't think we introduced a bill until about 2011 to 2012. It took us that long, you know, 3 years, you know, to really hone in on all the things we needed to do. In that time, you know, there were so many groups involved, again, going back to involving people, like working with the choice groups, you know, making sure that everything in there was to their liking. Then what happened, right? Then, of course, we had marriage equality, changed everything, because now we were recognizing as a state that, you know, two gay people could rightfully develop a family legitimately under New York state law. So surrogacy, I thought, oh my God, now, you know, we have the politics because we have another group. Not that two gay men wouldn't have needed a surrogate before, nor, you know, and they were actively having babies that way. But now in New York, we had an opportunity because we were the first state that legislatively did marriage equality. So I thought, okay, you know, this is next. So the Committee on Life and the Law, there's a task force that had made the original decision I know this is too long a story, but they made the original decision to, after Baby M in New Jersey, they had come out and said we should outlaw it. And some states did. New York was one of them. And so one of the ideas that we had was that we knew that politically it would be difficult to overcome that report unless there was a new one. So we asked the Committee on Life and the Law to again look at this issue. And that took a bunch of years. And, you know, Helene Weinstein, who was chair at the time, was the original sponsor. So she said, let's see what the new report says, you know, and it was taking a very long time. So I would say I made almost weekly calls, mostly to a voicemail. I'm sure somebody got it, but there's only a voicemail with that committee. And I would leave a voicemail saying, this is Amy Paulin. Just want to know, when is that report coming out? Just trying to get an idea. But we had some insiders, so we knew that the report was close. And then, out of the blue, I got a call from, who's now a senator, Alessandra Biaggi, working for the governor's office. And she said, you know, I'm interested in the surrogacy issue. And I said to her, you know, we need the committee, you know, we need the task force on life and law to, or the committee, I'm not even sure which it is, to issue their report. We understand through the grapevine that it's likely to be positive, but we want to get that report issued so that we can change the politics. And the next thing I knew, a few months later, the committee report came out, and it was extraordinarily positive. Very coincidentally, Cornell did a study and a report, the university, and that was positive. And then the next thing I knew, the governor was supporting the issue. So with all of that, that was all like over maybe a year and a half time period, everything changed. And then, of course, when the Senate changed, that was another factor because Brad Hoylman, as you might know, has two children by surrogate. And he's the Senate sponsor. When he came on board, he was the natural Senate sponsor because the opposition is primarily allies of many of the conservative Republicans, not all of them, but, you know, the active person or the active group against it is the Catholic Church for the most part. So it became everything started to happen. And so this became a year that we were hoping to get it done. And then, you know, we had the problem that the older feminists, primarily white older feminists, I might add, came out against it. And so there was almost a racial divide, and there was almost definitely a generational divide in our conference among the women. And, you know, so now we've got to overcome that obstacle. But I feel confident that we will, and I'm, you know, working on ideas to, you know, persuade my, you know, my very good colleagues, you know, that that the time is ripe for doing this bill.
And I imagine, based on watching you, you know, work the chamber with your, like, meticulous notes as you're talking to people, you've probably got a whip count in your head. So I'm wondering, like a vote like this, is this something where it's a go once you've got 76 Democrats on board, or do you have to actually get certain members of leadership on board, too?
Different bills are different. Mm-hmm. This falls into a category that I would say tugs at people's emotions. And, you know, with bills like that, there's very strong emotions, and some of the members have strong feelings against it. So I think that I have to, you know, talk to those members, understand those issues, and try to make arguments that might lessen their resolve against the bill. But I think that I have the vote. You know, I think the number of people who will vote for it, who either don't feel strongly about it or have been persuaded, are there in the assembly. It's just that there are some members who are very strongly opposed, and, you know, we need to figure that out.
And it's a little early, but do you have plans for your 2020 agenda already?
The way my plans form is, you know, I have existing bills. We're always working on new bills. You know, we went over all of the ideas. You know, we'll see how far we get. We probably have about 10 new bill ideas right now. And I have a staff member that's devoted toward doing that kind of research. And she's busy, you know, working on that. And so we'll see, you know, where we're at by January. And then once January hits, you know, I tend to, you know, work on those bills that have a live chance once January hits. You know, there's always new ones that come up, you know, through the committee, mm-hmm. you know, and then I'll do those as well. But, you know, this is my time period for really trying to get language said and all that to the best I can. There's a lot of vacations of the people I need, and, you know, everybody is taking it slower, as am I, you know, but I try from now till January to do as much legwork as I can so I'm ready to go. So in terms of priorities, you know, I have a few related to the committee. For example, I'm working on Port Authority reform, you know, an issue that's been around for a long time, and right now it only passed on the New York side. Getting very friendly with the New Jersey side in the gateway bill that we did. I have an opportunity to try to put in both statutes, so that would mean the law, because Port Authority has to be done in both New Jersey and New York. Sometimes it's revising a bill. Like, for example, you know, I did a gun bill, believe it or not, you know, one of the first gun bills with the Republicans with Steve Saland, and that had to do with, was require a finding on the part of on the domestic violence side, and unfortunately, it's not happening. It's not working. So I need to. So I'm revisiting that. You know, working. My staff member knows where. I mean, we just did this yesterday. I doubt any calls have been made. You know, but we're going to be reaching out to OCA and finding out exactly, you know, what we need to do to change that system to make it better. So those are, you know, two things that are brand new to me. And then it's, you know, at the end of session, there were a group of bills that just didn't make it at the end. You know, one of my pet things has been, and, you know, talk about how someone finds an experience. You know, I was, I had three home births. Well, I had two home births and one near home birth, which led me to the two home births. So I became very convinced that natural childbirth is a protector for both the woman and the child. So I have always tried to minimize the number of C-sections. They've only grown in our state and our country. Very upsetting to me. I believe that hurts women. That hurts the children that are born to those women. And so I've done bills. And one of those bills that I feel most enthusiastic about passed the Assembly, nearly passed the Senate, then was laid aside at the last minute. And so that's going to be something. I mean, that's going to be easy. But it's going to be a priority. So I have a few.
Well, Assemblywoman, I really appreciate you walking me through the ins and outs of your process. And I know I'll be talking with you probably over the next 6 months as all your bills get delivered to the governor and I need explanation. So thank you in advance for that. And thanks for talking to me today.
Yeah, I just hope this isn't too boring for everybody else. But thank you for giving me a chance to talk about what I love best.
Honestly, I know my audience, and basically I've found this fascinating, and they are like me and will find this fascinating as well.
All right, good. All right, well, thanks. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
And that's our show. My thanks to Assemblywoman Paulin for being so open and reflective in our discussion. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating and review wherever you download podcasts. It helps other political nerds find the program and continues to bury the one-star review Albany Andy left a year ago, in which I was described as, quote, unprepared. If you have ideas for future episodes, reach out to me on Twitter at Poozer87 or shoot an email to david.lombardo@timesunion.com. Until next time, podcast adjourned.
Heard. I tried to get you.
Ah, this day sucks.